Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So I want to do a little review. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. The place is in the northern region, in the Himalayas. The time is just after Krishna's departure from the earth. He just used this convenient figure 5,000 years ago, and it just forever stays 5,000 years ago. So 5,000 years ago, Krishna has just left. Which means Kali Yuga has just begun. Vidura's not completed his pilgrimage. He was sent by Uddhava to go find Maitreya and to receive instructions from Maitreya that Krishna said that Maitreya should give to Vidura. To Vidura. So he's gone. Vidura has inquired about the process of creation. And in a couple of chapters, that's been described. How does this material world unfold? And then from the original cause, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original cause. So then Vidura asks some really, tough questions, some graduate-level questions. Core theological questions. How does living entity becomes conditioned? How is it that something material comes from something all spiritual? Krishna is all spiritual. The Absolute Truth is all spiritual. So it's probing into the nature of the Absolute Truth, but it's also probing into the nature of this created world and what's the relation. So this morning we heard the first verse of Maitreya's response. In that first verse he smashed the conception of impersonalism. The conception of impersonalism says, please put your earplugs in as you're hearing this because it's contaminated sound. It's offensive to the personality of Godhead. The impersonal conception is that Brahman becomes covered by Maya. He who is unchanging and unchangeable for no good reason becomes covered by Maya. And that's what this is. This is covered Brahman. And what's the covering? Well, the covering isn't. So it's as Maitreya says, this is quite against logic. We covered many of the reasons why it's illogical and unacceptable. A metaphor was used. Curious and an appropriate metaphor. It's the living entity. We discussed the living entity becoming illusioned is like, what was the metaphor? Can you remember from this morning? There's a hint. In a dream, seeing your head cut off. Remember that one? Ever seen your head cut off before? The seeing component is in the head, so you can't see. You can see your face in reflection, but you can't see your head cut off in reflection because the seeing capacity is in the head. Even, you know, the object that's being reflected, the seeing capacity is taken away when the head is cut off. So, but seeing your head cut off, it's hallucination. It's fiction. It's not real. Although it may appear to be something real, it's not real. So similarly, living entity retains his original pure consciousness, but appears to be illusioned, and certainly behaves in illusioned ways, but that doesn't take away the pure consciousness of the living being. It's there, innate, dormant, just like we were discussing this morning. There is complete knowledge. That's what enlightenment means. It's something already within, and it comes out. It's not something from outside and you bring it in. Not that kind of thing. Importing transcendence. It's already fundamental to the soul. What to speak of knowledge isn't inherent in the soul. The perfect stage is a love of God. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Sadhya Kavunoi. In the language of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakti, love of God, Krishna Prema, it's already there, somewhere. Oh, there it is. It's inside. It's just dormant, like a seed is dormant and needs to be sprouted. And there's a way of awakening the seed, there's a way of awakening our dormant love of God. Shravanadi. Beginning with hearing. Shravana Adi. Shuddha Chitte. When consciousness becomes purified by that means. So, we have, so far there's these two things. The Supreme Lord is unchanging. And to say that he become covered by illusion and that's what creation is, that's unreasonable. Next is, so that's the Supreme Lord. Then there's the living entity. The living entity retains his original consciousness even though covered by Maya. So with this metaphor of seeing your head cut off in a dream, it's just a dream. It's phantasmagoria. It's hallucination. It's not. Illusion is illusion. And living entity is distinct from illusion. Illusion and reality are like the difference between dark and light. Quite distinct. So now, this evening, there's another metaphor. It's appropriate, it's the evening hour, so it's a metaphor of the moon. And the moon and the reflection of the moon on water. When you see reflection of a moon on water, what does it look like? Shimmering. Because the water is moving, the reflection of the moon on the water's surface is shimmering. So it looks like the moon is moving. But the moon isn't moving, it's standing still. The water is moving. And so it appears that the moon is shimmering. But it's not even the moon. It's a reflection of the moon. And that's what's shimmering. And the moon is something else besides the reflection. And it's not moving. In a comparison, the moon in the sky is Krishna, the source of the living entity and the source of the illusion of the living entity. This is using a metaphor to explain how the living entity becomes conditioned, as we discussed this morning. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. the living entity we discussed, two things, self-abandonment or disruption of his pure identification. Giving up the proper conception of who we are and taking on another one, illusory conception. And with that, miseries. Although we thought the program said happiness, and it turns out to be misery. Happiness in the mode of ignorance. It's like that, right? In the beginning, it appears to be, in passion, excuse me, appears to be nectar. And the end, it's misery. Happiness in the mode of ignorance is miserable in the beginning and miserable at the end. But exactly, it's all misery, even the happiness of passion, because it's forgetful of Krishna. And with that forgetfulness of Krishna, the real happiness is also abandoned. The happiness of sense gratification completely takes away any sense of transcendence. Like, Krishna just disappears. I'm debating whether to go down a certain path or not. I think I won't. I'll touch on it lightly. Because you have a community here. There's older people, quite elderly people. There's adults that are, you know, mature adults. There's college student level, there's teenagers, there's nice young boys and girls, and there's little babies. It's a whole range of ages. And one of the challenging things in any community is when the baby becomes a young boy, the young boy becomes a young man, or young girl becomes a young woman, and they start experiencing things they didn't experience before, boy-girl attraction. I mean, maybe you're unique and you don't have that, but most of the world has it. And I've been spending some time with some of our youth and some other places to help them understand the nature of that boy-girl attraction, and it's not being checked or restricted by proper standards. It can completely take away any sense of Krishna. Transcendence is like, what's that? So then, in our discussions, there's a difference between religious life and transcendental life. Religious life is you do those things religiously. And transcendental life is, you don't do anything unless it's for Krishna. And the nature of boy-girl attraction is, it completely takes away both. At least it completely takes away transcendence. And maybe it can be religiously done, but generally, that isn't what happens. So, student life is none of that. And then when student life is completed, then by religious codes, by proper standards, some arrangement is made to facilitate the necessity of male-female attraction. But the very nature of that male-female attraction, it steals away. It's like a burglar. It's a mugger. It's like a mobster just comes in and takes over and everything is gone. You wonder what happened. Everything good is taken away by that one thing. It's such a powerful thing. Transcendental life is stronger. Transcendental life is so strong, all of that diminishes and is enabled to be put in a proper position, perspective. I've been doing this question-answer thing, service, for, I don't know, 6-7 years now, and recently somebody sent in a question about Narottam Das Thakur from Prema Chandrika writing, where he describes the living entity has 6 enemies: Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, Matsarja. You know those 6 enemies. And he writes that rather than by negation, I engage those things only in service to Krishna. Anger, lust, greed, illusion. How do you engage illusion? So someone was asking, how do you engage illusion in Krishna's service? And the answer given by our acharyas is, in the state of ecstatic love of God, one behaves like a mad person. One becomes overwhelmed. You know, your external faculties become slackened because of the internal attraction for Krishna. And following our 6 Goswamis, I'll come back to the verse in just a moment, but following the 6 Goswamis, they never say, oh, now I've seen Krishna. Business finished. They're in that mood of feeling, searching for Krishna and becoming maddened in illusion by that search for Krishna. Hey Radhe Vrajadevi Ke Chalalite. And that's our engaging illusion in Krishna's service. How do you engage lust in Krishna's service? He, Narottam Das Thakur, says same thing that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kamos me, that which is according to religious principles, that I am. And other than that, the answer is forget it. It doesn't have any place. It doesn't have any place. It's like the Bhagavad Gita example of the tortoise or turtle. If there's some service to Krishna, the senses are extended. And if there's not service to Krishna, the senses are withdrawn. And if we don't have that principle governing our life, then we're at big risk, because we move about in the world, and in the world people are doing all kinds of things, and we're Vaishnavas. We're, you know, we don't belong in that realm, but here we are. So before we are given the privilege of returning to the spiritual world, we're going to be in this atmosphere that's got things that devotees just don't do, and so it's one of these. And it's in your face, as they say in the West, like billboards. I mean, Vishakhapatnam is becoming a very advanced city. The billboards are becoming more and more prominent and more in your face, advertising this or that and the other something in your face. The description of Maya, one of the descriptions of Maya given by Srila Prabhupada, is it's like a prostitute calling some customer, making this motion, come on and enjoy, come on and enjoy, so I can kick you in the face. That's Maya. You know, it looks nice, or at least, you know, to a bewildered person, it may look nice. It's not nice. All good things become lost, and instead of happiness, it's misery. That's what Maya is. So the original quality of the soul is abandoned, and misery is accepted. Now, going back to this metaphor, that shimmering of the water and the reflection of the moon on the water appears the moon is shimmering, or the moon is moving. Here's how Srila Prabhupada described it in the purport. The water moves, but the moon does not move. Similarly, the living entity appears to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries. Although in the pure soul no such qualities are present, they're completely absent. We'll go over this a few times just because so it'll sink in a little bit, but the soul is transcendental. The soul doesn't have any of these qualities. So when you're passing through a time when somebody insults you, maybe it happens every now and then, somebody says something harsh and mean, and then you feel something like, why are you being harsh and mean and cruel? What did I do? And maybe you think about, you know, maybe it's my karma, or maybe you think that person's crazy, or think all kinds of things. But the real fact is, it has nothing to do with us. In the absolute sense of reality, this material world is an apparition. It's like the shimmering of the moon on the surface of the water. The word in the verse, pratiyate, which means apparently or not actually, like the experience of having one's head cut off in a dream, is significant. The reflection of the moon on the water, so we're not speaking of the moon, we're speaking of the reflection on the water, is the separated rays of the moon, and not the actual moon. So there's the moon, and then the separated rays, and then the rays being reflected. It's like twice removed. Similarly, the living entity is that separated part and parcel of the Lord. There's the Lord, there's the energy of the Lord, generically, energy, and then there's the living entity, separated, part and parcel, entangled in the, quote, water of material existence. And that living entity, separated part and parcel of the Lord, appears to have quivering qualities. But that's not our qualities. Like, you know, someone says some insulting, harsh or cruel. And then the mind is the reflecting surface. According to the configuration of the mind, you see the world. The world is out there. It's neutral. And supposing you don't have this experience, but supposing do you have these things in India where they have ice and they put syrup in the ice and it has a flavoring? Call it snow cones, chopped ice with some colored syrup. Yes? He's saying no. Somewhere you have another. What's the name?
Huh?
Okay, they sell it. So supposing you saw one of those in the middle of the winter. Not attractive at all. It's already cold. You don't, you know. Or let's, you know, it's a fan. And it's really cold morning. Somebody turns the fan on. No, fan. Stop the fan. So now it's okay. It's nice. It's a little warm. Depending upon our circumstance, something appears to be nice or not nice, attractive or repulsive. Attraction and repulsion of the senses for the sense objects depends upon the mind. What is happiness for the introspective sage is nighttime for the conditioned soul and vice versa. One man's food is another man's poison. Same idea. Something that somebody may be attractive to eat, for us it's disgusting. And vice versa. How can you eat that stuff, people would say. Anyway. So, according to the configuration of the mind, we see the world. According to the conceptions of life that we carry, we see the world. The mind is ruling the conditioned soul. Not the soul is ruling the lower energies, intelligence, mind, and the senses. It's upside down. The mind is ruling. And according to the conceptions in the mind, we see things differently. And the configuration of the mind has a lot to do with what association we have been keeping. Sangat sanjayate kama. According to the association we keep, we develop qualities. Guna. So the qualities of the mind for the person in the mode of goodness. Austerities are very nice. Cleanliness is very nice. The person in the quality of goodness, they come into an unclean place and you feel uncomfortable. It's like first thing is you make the place clean. And a person that's not like that, they come into a clean place and they're uncomfortable. They're comfortable when it's a mess. Anyway, but none of the qualities of the conditioned soul are actually the soul's qualities. The modes of nature are foreign to the soul. But they become accepted by the soul. Out of this one purpose, the turning attention away from the supreme in the wish to become the enjoyer of the property of the supreme. Very fundamental. We discussed it this morning. Then, how does illusion work? This is a very nice structure. It's a pillar. It's helping to. I suppose it's a structural one. It's helping to hold up, you know, the building that we're sitting in. And it's painted yellow. I mean, it's very innocent. It's just a pillar. So, how is that illusion? It's like, you know, it's not illusion, it's solid. Yesterday we observed the appearance day of Advaita Acharya. I don't know if you had the opportunity to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita in the course of the day sometime about the role of Advaitacharya in relation to creation. He's the same as Mahavishnu, and what does Mahavishnu do? He brings about creation. But it's a specific component of bringing about creation that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a remote cause and there's a material cause, or nimitta, maya, and upadan maya in Sanskrit. So nimitta we know from Bhagavad Gita. Nimitta matram bhavya savya sachin. Arjuna is being asked by Krishna, become my nimitta, become my instrument. So Krishna is the remote. Without Krishna, nothing happens. So by Krishna's willing something to happen, he already showed Arjuna it's already happened, because it's his will that the Kauravas would be destroyed. He saw that in the universal form before the battle even began. They were destroyed. Time was separating, but they were destroyed. And he's asking Arjuna to be his instrument. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for creation to take place, because that's one of the questions that's being asked, is how does something material come from something spiritual? It's one of the potencies of the Lord. And by his willing it, the creation happens. But then there's another causal factor, the material cause, or upadan maya. And that's the part that that Advaita Acharya plays. That is, the potency of the Supreme Lord is invested in matter so that its transformations start to take place. Matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. Correct? Matter is inert. It'll just like sit there like a lump. Eventually it will even disintegrate, deteriorate into the basic core elements. When living entities with desire, kama, and qualities and karma, they bring those elements, they assemble those elements in some fashion and make things. Pots and plates is the classic Vedic example. Pots and plates. But what's pots and plates? It's simply a transformation of earth. That's what this is, and that's what this is. Or we can say earth and water and fire and air. That's what bodies are. But what makes this appear to be real? Like, you know, how is it that we accept that this is me? It's the investing of that capacity or that potency by the Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, it's just dull matter. It's just a lump. Just as we say, sharira avidya jal. This body is a lump of ignorance. Pretty blunt. Well, what makes it appear to be other than a lump of ignorance? We don't think of this nice body as a lump of ignorance. We think of it as, well, we try to make it something. Smell nice, look nice, something. Maya is invested with potency to move and to appear in different forms, like columns or pots and plates. It doesn't happen without the sanction, without the potency of the Supreme Lord. Nothing happens without the potency of the Supreme Lord. Can we see the potency of the Supreme Lord in that pillar or this body or any other thing of this world? We don't see it. But the verse is helping us understand, without it, it's there, and without it, we don't have creation, nor do we have the appearance of something, you know, walking in a building and, you know, feeling whatever we feel about being here. we're completely dependent. We're not tuned into that dependency in conditioned state. We're tuned into checking out the scene so we can enjoy it, making it to match our modes of nature so we enjoy it, doing our little God project wherever we happen to be on some part of this earth planet. This verse is helping us to get out of that consciousness by understanding, by this nice metaphor, the shimmering water or the mind. Because the mind is that reflecting surface where there's desires, and according to our desires, it strikes us. I like that color. I like this shape. I like this form. I like this person. I like the smell, or the opposite. I don't like it. So that's the mind. And our happiness is in distress comes from that. It springs from that. As Prabhupada writes, the light of the sun and the moon reflected on matter makes matter bright and praiseworthy. I've been explaining this in terms of Advaita Acharya's investing potency in matter, but it's the same thing said in a different way. What is it that appears something is praiseworthy or very nice? Without the light of the moon and the sun, it's darkness. It's nothing. Nothing. Without the potency of the personality of Godhead, similarly, nothing here has any meaning at all. We can't even see it. What to speak of? It doesn't exist. Like, you know, before Brahma began creation, what existed? Darkness. In all directions. Can you imagine that? Not just, you know, somewhere out there there's a door and there's a street. There's no door and there's no street. There's no nothing. Just darkness in all directions. And then creation. The creation is temporary. Now you see it, now you don't. So go back to all it is darkness in all directions. What's a nice devotee to do in that situation? You worship Krishna. And you have this situation and you worship Krishna. But the goal, the objective is keep the mind fixed on reality, with a capital R, reality. What's real? What's really real? And the mind and the particular configuration of mind and how the external things strike the mind, that's not what reality with a capital R is. It appears so because of the potency of the personality of Godhead. Illusion can't happen without the personality of Godhead. But what's the relationship between the moon and the reflection of the moon on water? The moon is stationary. Because of the moon, there's a reflection. The separated rays are causing reflection. But the moon is not changed at all. Krishna is not moved. He's not influenced by the illusion that his existence has created. And the seeming praiseworthiness of something of this world. Or the opposite of praiseworthiness, the bad condition of something. He's not responsible for or affected by it. Then Prabhupada speaks about life symptoms. Life symptoms are compared to the light of the sun and the moon illuminating material manifestations, like trees and mountains. So then you get into details. There's life symptoms. There's life, and then there's symptoms of life. It's just, again, investing of the energy of the sun and the moon in this realm, illuminating and giving life to. So there's life symptoms. Put it the other way around. Supposing that the sun went out, like you know, burned out, it's disappeared. So there's no sun, there's no moon. Where there's going to be life symptoms? The answer is there's not. Not only can it get really cold, but life is depending upon, it's generated from, it's being nurtured by the light and energy of the sun and the moon. So we have life symptoms. But how are the sun and the moon affected by the life symptoms that are happening down here? Not at all. They're just shining. Krishna is not, the example is to illustrate that Krishna is not affected. He remains unchanged, because that was the question. Although there's all kinds of changes happening here. It's his energy. And according to this is the operative point, according to the different receptivity of the light of the sun, different things happen here. Although it's just one, it's the same sun. How is there different receptivity? And according to how that object which the sun touches with its rays is receptive to the light of the sun, it manifests life symptoms and qualities and very all kinds of variegated things. And with the time, energy, and the modes of nature and karma, it's a kaleidoscope. It keeps changing all the time, like moment to moment. There's some steady factors, and then there's some changing factors. And there's life cycles, and then, you know, the soul leaves the body at the end of life, and who knows where the soul is going to go. Some carry over, but also some major change. And that's what goes on, although it's the energy of the light, energy of the sun and the moon on the surface. So, again, the operative point is, what's our receptivity? The message of Krishna Bhakti is, turn your receiver on to Krishna. Tune into the Krishna channel and stay there. And you'll become Krishna conscious. Don't keep moving channels. Maya channel, Krishna channel, Maya channel, Krishna channel. That's not our mantra. It's Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And stay on that channel. Bring your consciousness to Krishna. Then the illusion subsides. The water will continue to move. The moon will continue to reflect on the surface of the water, but one will no longer identify with that. In other words, when you become Krishna conscious, the city here is going to still keep going on doing its thing. More billboards, more this and more that, more prosperity, more progress, economic development, more construction, like that, all that noise with the construction up here, and all over the place. You know, the mode of passion and ignorance, they'll keep marching on. But the devotee will become progressively more and more undisturbed by that and be concerned with awakening the consciousness of the souls who have completely forgotten their real purpose and are just caught up in illusion. So your own Krishna consciousness, by tuning into the Krishna channel or by hearing this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, detaching yourself from illusion, not just in name, not just, you know, you give the right answer on the exam when you're taking your Bhakti Shastri exam or something, but you live your life that way. It's carried in your heart. And so we were speaking this morning about theoretical and realized knowledge. So when it becomes like realized knowledge, because you apply it, you live that way. Because it's inside you. And based upon proper hearing. Although the light of the moon is the same everywhere, due to being differently appreciated, it appears different. Similarly, the light of the Lord is equally distributed everywhere, but due to being differently received, it appears different. Conclusion. One should therefore not accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and misunderstand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. The quivering quality of the moon is also variable. When the water is standing still, there is no quivering. A more settled conditioned soul quivers less. But due to material connection, the quivering quality is more or less present everywhere. So it's not a matter of just becoming a good person. It's a matter of fixing your mind upon Krishna completely. That's the progressive diminishing the illusion proportionate to one's becoming fixed upon the objective. And as one advancement in spiritual life, a common question that people ask is, how can I evaluate how I'm progressing in Krishna consciousness? Here's on the plus side and the minus side. The plus side is your thoughts are going to Krishna. Here's a real good one. When you have some unexpected difficulty, an obstacle, somebody steps on your foot or something, you're moving along your day-to-day life and suddenly something unexpected happens. Where do your thoughts go? First thought, what's your first thought? There's an indicator of how you're dancing in Krishna consciousness. When Krishna is your shelter, your thoughts immediately go to Krishna. If you're an animal, your thoughts immediately go to defense. Immediately. Danger. You don't have to think about it. It's just you got a nervous system and it kicks in. You don't have to think about it. And if you're Krishna conscious, just by being attached to Krishna, your thoughts go to Krishna. And the opposite, the negative is detachment from the so-called attractions that were formerly my very life. It just subsides. Detachment from matter. Virakir anyatra cha. So reading of Srimad Bhagavatam in this way is to help us accomplish both. Detachment from illusion and more clearly, more vividly identifying are what a real shelter is. That which is unchanging. And we can always count on. Material circumstances we cannot count on. There's no safety in this world. There's no shelter. Sorry for the bad news, but that's the fact. There is real shelter. And recognizing that the illusion is not shelter is an impetus for shelter. Not just negative thinking. It's reality and it's impetus for taking shelter in Krishna. Finding sat and taking shelter there. Okay. Any comments or question? Yes.
Maharaj, you said depending on the perspective, level of advancement, different degrees of shivering is experienced. But we are also part of a larger group, as part of the Krishna consciousness movement. We are participating in some kind of preaching endeavor. Now, our shimmering or this instability cause some kind of obstacle to the preaching efforts of the spiritual master or with whom we are associated. Now, what is the protection for what I'm trying to explain is, will it not, because of my some weakness, there is an impact on the larger movement as such due to some my being associated with the movement?
I hope you're clear about what you're asking, because I'm not.
There is some experience of shimmering in consciousness at any level until people become pure devotees of Krishna. But we are associated with some project or some preaching or some program, and will it not affect the program in some way, or the devotees associated with us, our superiors? How does a devotee look at that?
Well, let's rather than go cosmic, let's just go local. Because there's a community here. And I'm a participant, you're a participant, and each of us are participants. Children are participants, elderly are participants, the whole range, we're all participants. I'm trying to take responsibility for controlling my mind and fixing it upon Krishna and diminishing the shimmering effect. Now your question is, how am I to see, or how am I impacted by the shimmering of others, the lack of mind and focus upon the goal and so forth? That's your question.
How is mind going to impact on
me? Oh, Krishna. It's not your effort, it's Krishna. If you become an instrument of what Krishna's message is, then just by one individual becoming Krishna conscious, its impact is directly affecting others. Others are lifted up. Using the metaphorical language, the shimmering of others is diminished. And that means, let's say, when someone starts to vacillate or become more agitated or more disturbed, then your capacity to bring that agitated condition or disturbed condition down is enhanced. You become an instrument of Krishna. And Krishna's will can act through you. Is that?
If
I as an individual am not Krishna conscious, how is it impacting negatively the others? Well, it definitely impacts negative. So let me be, understanding that, let me be a good citizen, a good member of the community. And the other community members will be inviting for me to do that, right? They'll be encouraging me to continue in that way. In other words, I'm a struggling soul. I'm not this exemplary soul. I need some kind help and assistance. I'm willing to make my sincere most effort, but I need some help and assistance. And the other, because it's a community, that help and assistance is readily available. But it's not taking away from, if the sincerity is there, it's contributing to. Even I may not be so advanced and others are more advanced, I'm contributing to that overall objective. Because the overall objective is what Vaishnavas want. The Vaishnavas don't want to go back to Godhead alone. They want to go back to Godhead in the company of those who are in this unfortunate condition. All right. Anything else? We have a member of our community up here by that light fixture, that little lizard. He's helping to remove the mosquitoes. He waits till one goes by and he goes and gets him. Then he goes back to the light and hangs out. He's serving the Vaishnavas. Although he's not thinking like that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.